That's right. That's the way it is at the Chicago Tribune. And, of course, we're talking about the reporter who reports the reports for us here at WGN, Cory Rumohr. Good evening, madam, from the journalism world, the world of journalism. How's it going in the world there with the journalistic people that you're surrounded by?
Wow, that makes me sound super official, which I'm not sure I am.
Not only are you, you are super dash duper official. All right. It's going to raise that duper level. Better believe it.
Oh my God. You know, my husband and I, we watched Good Night and Good Luck last night. We had recorded it.
Which one?
The one that they aired on CNN, the George Clooney, the Broadway version. Yeah. Did you see it?
Oh, did I ever?
Yeah.
I loved it. Now, you know, that was a movie too. Are you aware of that?
I did not know that.
Oh, yeah. There, George Clooney did a movie a few years ago. It's exactly the same thing called Good Night and Good Luck. And this was a stage version of it. Now, did you? I'll give you a little John Landecker trivia.
Ooh.
In the movie and also in the CNN version, the Army McCarthy hearings are underway. And there's a lawyer named Joseph Nye Welch. And they showed the clip of this person because it is an iconic clip that has been repeated over and over since then. And he says something to the effect of, "At long last, sir, at long last, have you lost all decency?" Or something along those lines. It's a really big line, okay?
Yeah.
That's Joseph Nye Welch is... is the great grandfather for my kids on their mother's side.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So you have a personal connection to this.
Well, I never met him, but when I was dating his granddaughter, Judy, I would go over to their home and they would have, you know, pictures framed. And he also played a judge when, you know, this sort of catapulted him into a certain level of fame. He was on the cover of Life magazine. He played played the judge in the movie Anatomy of a Murder. He did a television show called Omnibus, and they had somehow gotten their hands on the teleprompter paper. Which is actually, it's not like it is now in all digital. This was actually something rolled, like a paper rolled. And they used it to wallpaper the bathroom in the basement. Okay, that's enough. There you go.
Okay, I love that.
But, yeah, good night, good luck. Indeed. I'm telling you, that was really...
I was blown away. No, to me, that was like heavy hitting journalism. So...
Oh my. Not only heavy, but, you know, Edward R. Murrow, McCarthy, the House on American Activities Committee. I mean, some of it sounds very familiar.
Yes.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink, you know.
Yes, yes. Extremely relevant today.
Right.
Yes.
Which I think is one of the reasons that Clooney did it, quite frankly. Yeah. And
but he didn't win a Tony. He didn't win a Tony for it.
Oh, that's okay. he can't win everything. I don't even know if he's won an Oscar. But he's so good looking, who cares?
There you go.
No, he didn't get an Oscar, but he's hot. All right.
Yes. Very, very true. Oh, I found something. Speaking of stuff in the archives, I found something about George Clooney because when he was interviewed before he was going to star on Broadway in Good Night and Good Luck, he talked about the last time he remembered doing theater on stage was in Chicago.
Really?
And I looked it up, and he was a member. He wasn't the lead, but he was on stage. It was a play about Sid Vicious and Nancy Spurgeon.
No.
It was called Vicious. And the Tribune reviewed it. I'm going to see if I can pull it up here.
You know who Sid Vicious was, don't you?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And apparently this was a new play that debuted at Steppenwolf, and George Clooney was part of it. And really? Yeah, it was in 1986. And yeah, the Tribune reviewed it and liked him in it. But yeah, that was apparently the last time he had been on stage before he did Good Night and Good Luck was here in Chicago.
Because then, if I remember his his celebrity trajectory, if you will, when he got on ER, which was a great show that ran for quite a while.
Yeah.
And then after that, that was television, of course. And then he got into some movies and, you know, the rest, as they say, is history, so to speak. Yes, indeed. Well,
pretty cool.
Very cool. Corey Rumor, we shall hang out here until 9 o'clock. Who knows what we will bring up? Some of our articles? Perhaps. Maybe not. Who knows? We'll be back on 720 WGN. That's the way it is in the world of secret broadcasting newspaper journalism. When you need to pass on a secret in the park. No one else is there, of course, except these two guys in like trench coats. Passing this envelope back and forth, like, no, that's not conspicuous. not at all. 720 WGN, John Landecker, 20 minutes after 8 o'clock with Corey Rumor, who writes for the Chicago Tribune. Okay, so there's this very interesting article that you put together. How these Chicago nuns use sports to spread their message of service. When we band together, we're powerful. But before we get into it, okay, one of these nuns danced on the dugout at Wright Field. Another earned a Topps trading card for throwing a perfect strike. And the third nun has run the Chicago Marathon 13 consecutive times. Now, here's my deal on this. And it's just a theory. Now, with the new Pope, who is from the South Side and also a White Sox fan, he's worn the hat recently. It occurred to me that these nuns that you speak of, also in the article, their connection with all of this is through the Chicago White Sox, not the Chicago Cubs. And it just occurred to me that maybe, and this is just off the top of my head, and I may be totally wrong, that there are possibly more parochial schools and Catholics on the south side of Chicago than there are on the north side. That may be totally wrong. I don't know. But it could be true, and that might explain to a certain extent why, you know, you never really hear about nuns or throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley Field. You know, I mean, it usually has something to do with the Chicago White Sox. You know, not that there's anything wrong or right about this. It's just my little observation. So that's the end of that.
No, I think that's a valid observation because I don't have the numbers to show
where
Catholics live around the city, but I mean, the Daly family grew up. Bridgeport, lots of parishes that
Beverly,
way.
Beverly, come on.
Yes. So I do agree with you. And also, I mean, free tickets help too, right?
Oh, yes, of course, they always do. Yeah.
Yes, the ones I spoke with talked about how, you know, they've either been guests of the White Sox specifically, or they have family members who take them to games. But I kind of, after, as you said, the Pope was chosen and it became very clear. You remember at first everybody said, he's a Cubs fan. And then his brothers told, you know, broadcast news, no, he has never been a Cubs fan. But after that happened, I realized, you know, on a couple different occasions, I've gone to White Sox games and I've seen nuns there. So, that's kind of how it came to mind. And thankfully, I was able to speak with three who have varying ranges of loyalty to the White Sox. Right. It's probably a lot more now. And this past Sunday, there was a big event at the Wright Field.
Yes.
There was a mass there.
Right.
So, yeah, I just think it's very interesting.
So let's talk about these nuns, one who danced on top of the dugout at right field. Who would that be?
That is Sister Jean, but not the Sister Jean affiliated with Loyola University. This is Sister Jean Haley, and she actually grew up in Oak Park in a big Catholic family, and mm-hmm. they would go to White Sox games since she was a kid. And so she has been a White Sox fan since then. And in the early 2000s, the 2010s, I took a picture of my husband with her because she would carry a sign around at the games that said, "Nuns love the White Sox." And it had an illustration that someone had done for her of a nun swinging a bat. And she had the sign signed by various White Sox players. So yeah, she showed up in her habit, and she was visible for a long time. And yeah, she said at one of the games she went to, she was invited to dance on top of the dugout with Southpaw, the White Sox mascot. And she said, sure, why not? So. Wow.
Yeah, I love that attitude. And you got another one here that earned a Topps trading card for throwing a perfect strike. How does that happen?
Yeah, so some people might remember Sister Mary Jo Sobiech. She had been a teacher for about 20 years at Marian Catholic High School. And it was, I think it was a Catholic school's celebration at one of the games. And so she was invited to throw out the first pitch, and it went viral. I mean, it is a beautiful pitch, a beautiful strike, and she actually was up for an ESPY award because of it.
You're kidding.
It was beautiful. The way when she walked up to do the traditional first pitch, she actually bounced the ball off of her bicep before she set up to throw the pitch. Yeah, it's incredible. Okay. You got to Google it.
Hold on a second. She bounced the ball off of her bicep?
Yes.
And then I've seen the video of that. Trust me. Yep. Yeah. You want to see that. This woman strolls up to the mound, she does the bouncing off the bicep, and it's like she threw a pitch that was business.
So like
she didn't do a wimpy pitch. She put one in the zone.
So let me ask
and she
here.
Meant it.
So she bounces it off the bicep and then what? Grabs it and throws it?
Yes.
Gotcha.
She did her stance and went into the windup, threw the pitch, and it was like the catcher didn't move. He didn't need to.
I mean, you're like on a rope.
Nailed it.
Into the glove. Oh, I got to see that.
Oh, it's so good. That is so cool.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, she's really cool. And she was there this past Sunday at Wright Field. And my fingers are crossed because the White Sox know she's back in town. She had been out of town the past couple of years studying. And so she's back in town and available. So here's hoping the White Sox.
Another pitch.
Yes, do it again, Sister Mary Jo.
Sister Mary Jo.
Actually, you know, maybe Sister Mary Jo can throw the first pitch and then be given a carriage ride out to the bullpen, where she will be called in the sixth inning, because they'll probably need her help.
I love it.
Just saying.
That is wild. I got a text from 815. Valid point, talking about North Side, South Side. My father grew up in Chicago, North Side Protestant. I grew up a Catholic on Chicago's South Side. A lot of Catholic schools and churches, which is what I thought. Not to say that validates completely what I was thinking about. But, you know, if you're the South Side, and it doesn't make, I'm not saying that if you're a South Sider in this town, regardless of what you believe spiritually or any other way, and if you're into baseball, you know, you've got to be a Sox fan. That's just, that's the law. Pretty much.
Absolutely.
And then the opposite goes. If you're on the North Side, you got to be a Cubs fan. I mean, that's just, it's the way it's been. Forever, as far as I know.
The two parts of the city, I think, look at their respective baseball teams very differently.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't matter how bad in a given season the Cubs may be playing.
Yeah.
40,000 people will be at Wrigley.
Yeah. Well, that's not true. The way it always was, but that's the way it is now.
On the other hand, other side of the city, in the South Side, even if they are playing in the World Series, the stadium will not be sold out, which is kind of strange.
Yes, I
just saying.
I totally
agree. So you know what's interesting, David, about that is, you know, tickets were sold out for this mass that was at Wright Field on Sunday.
And the stadium still wasn't full.
Right, right. Exactly.
I mean, for the Pope recorded a message for faithful. Yeah, but if it wasn't a full house.
I'll bet if the Pope was standing on the mound to do this was actually in Wright Field.
Yeah, might have a point.
I bet it had been to the rafters. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. All right. We're talking to Corey Remore, and we're going to do more with Remore. But right now, it's the bottom of the hour. Time to get into the WGN newsroom. Yeah. That's Homer has got ink all over him now, because that's the way it really works. 720 WGN, 835 with John Landecker, talking to Corey Remore from the Chicago Tribune. And we're in the midst of nuns and acts of athletic prowess and relationships with the Chicago White Sox. I think I've covered most of it. Tell me if I'm wrong, right?
No, so, we cover everything.
So did we? I mean, we had the nun dancing on the dugout.
On the dugout.
Then the nun with the pitch.
Yeah.
But we haven't, I don't think we've done the one with the marathons.
Yeah, this is another, by the way, all three of these women just do amazing, really good stuff for the community, and they are so dedicated to what they do. And I asked them, like, do you ever feel like you're signing up for a life where you don't have any control over it? And each one of them, and they don't know each other. Each one
really?
Of them,
they don't know each other.
Because there are three different orders, and one takes care of senior citizens in a facility for senior citizens. Another, teaches in high school, and then the running nun, Sister Stephanie Beliga, she works with the poor on the west side of Chicago. So each one of these amazing women have signed up for these lifestyles because they felt called to do it, and they don't like notoriety at all. In fact, two out of the three, I had to be a little persistent to get them to talk to me. But they are very devoted to the work that they do, and they actually feel like as part of that work, they have a tremendous amount of freedom. And they do really good stuff, for the people in Chicago.
Absolutely. And in all of these cases, I'm not Catholic, so I may have a incorrect view of all of this, but it seems that they represent a image of sisters in the Catholic Church that's doesn't conform to to the old fashioned what?
Yeah, yeah.
The way that we looked at nuns, so to speak.
Exactly. In fact, Sister Jean Haley, she's like, hey, I went to school where I was taught by nuns, and I had my hand slapped by nuns, too. So right. I know what the image is that people have in their heads. But and she doesn't claim to be perfect or live a perfect life.
Of course not.
She's I'm trained as a nurse, and this is the life that I've devoted myself to. I want to take care of people in their final years. I want to be there for people when they're dying. And so just a commitment to that type of a life. It's just so special. And, I feel like with the news of the Pope, it's huge for our area. And it's a great thing for Chicago. It really puts a spotlight on Chicago and on, the Pope's modest upbringing, but devotion to his faith and also education. I mean, he's a brilliant man. But there are a lot of other people working within the Catholic Church as well. And that's why I thought it would be interesting to speak with these three nuns about what their lives are like.
Yes, absolutely. And, they set an example, not just for, well, for everybody, I think, you know, and show that they can do things in their order, so to speak, in Catholicism as a nun, that doesn't impede them from enjoyment, spreading positive images through athletics and sports. I mean, that's the best. I mean, I think anyway. I mean, as opposed to like you said, that idea of like going to a Catholic school and getting your hands wrapped by the ruler and stuff like that. I mean, this is pretty much the opposite of that.
These aren't your grandparents. These aren't the ones who taught your grandparents. They're really modern people. And Sister Stephanie Beliga, the running nun, the nun who's run the Chicago Marathon 13 times, she's amazing. Training for 14th. She was a Division I runner at the University of Illinois. She was in cross country. She was in track. And it was an injury that actually ended. I mean, she wanted to become a professional at this. And it was an injury that really caused her to take a look at her life and to try to figure out, okay, I'm not going to be a professional athlete. So now what? And so it was this lifestyle that she began looking into, and it appealed to her. So as a 22-year-old college graduate, wow. She joined the Mission of Our Lady of Angels and works on the west side of Chicago. She teaches, she spends most of her weekday mornings traveling around Chicago, picking up donations that her organization gives out to people. So, yeah, I mean, there are a lot of people in Chicago who do such good things for the city and for its people. And she's just another example.
You know, I have to say, anytime I went to any kind of function where I had to be, you know, John Landecker, in quotes, and have some sort of responsibility, and I saw that there would be a priest or a nun that would also be involved on the dais or have something to do with what was going on, I totally relaxed because these people were so great. It's hard to explain. As I said earlier, I'm not a Catholic, but I felt so comfortable talking to them, and they were so real talking to me that I've always remembered this. It was just a great thing. And when I was back at LS in the 70s, we had this assembly program where I would go out during the day with this multimedia production, and we would go to Chicago area schools. And so when I went to parochial schools, it was like the best because there was more organization, shall I say, of the student body. And they were also unbelievably enthusiastic. It was it was so great. All right. More with Corey Rumor from the Chicago Tribune coming up momentarily. 720 WGN, good evening. I'm John Landecker here at the ballpark where Sister Mary Jo Sablex, I believe that's how you say her name, is a Marian Catholic Knight with the White Sox. She's taking the mound right now, saluting the crowd. She's going to throw out a pitch. She looks, gives her sign to the catcher, bounces it off her bicep, and it's a strike right down the middle. There you go.
It was just like that.
It was that. I was playing an actual.
You were doing play-by-play.
Well, I had to describe the video because nobody knew what was going on. But that was actually her walking up to the mound, bouncing it off her bicep, and throwing it. Marian Catholic Knight at the Chicago White Sox. Unbelievable. Very cool. So cool, I'll tell you. I think we've covered all the nuns that were in your article, have we not? I believe.
Yes, Yes, I think we did.
And where would you like to go now in the time remaining?
Oh, you tell me. You tell me, Jeff.
You tell me. Come on. Talk about anything. See. What do you want to talk about? Anything. I don't care. Something you wrote about or not. Whatever.
Let's see. Well, I always want to pick your brain about music because you've had to listen to a lot of music over the years, good and bad. What was your least favorite song to play?
Oh, everybody knows. Well, this is sort of an iconic John Landecker thing. It's Debbie Boone, You Light Up My Life. Have you ever heard the song?
Oh, God, yes.
Now, I've had to I don't know how many times I've had to explain this, but I'll explain it to you because, you know, it's new to you, right?
Yeah.
No, wait a minute. No.
Right.
Because I was party to one instance where he made a comment about that particular song.
It sucked then and it still sucks now.
Then and it sucks now.
But that's here's the thing. Here's the thing. So back in the, and I've told this story I don't know how many times, and I guess I'll be telling it a few more times because not everybody knows it. For instance, Corey, because she's too young. Here's what happened.
Right.
Well, this is before you were born. So stations like WLS in the 70s, who were top 40 stations that played the hits, they repeated the top five songs every 90 minutes. There were, I think, five 90-minute stopwatches, clocks, assigned to the top five records, and they counted down, and when they got to zero, that was the next song you played. So if you were under the impression that these stations repeated their songs over and over and over again, you were absolutely correct, because they were repeating them over and over and over again.
You just didn't know how often they were repeating them over and over again.
And listeners picked up on that, but now go to the other side of the microphone. To the people who actually have to play it, and how many times we had to hear it, okay? Not to say that on the surface, Debbie Boone's Light Up My Life is a bad song, but since I was supposed to be a nighttime teenage rock jock, by the time I'd heard it, I don't know, umpteen times, I was, you know...
Slightly burned out, shall we say?
And it just was, and it was success.
Little?
So one night it went on the air, and one night I went on the air and announced on the air that I did not like Debbie Boone's You Light Up My Life personally, but I understood that many people did. So I have decided to play it on the installment plan. And what I'm going to do now is play the first 15 seconds of You Light Up My Life. And then in about half an hour, I will play the second 15 seconds and so on and so on until we get to the end of the show at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, whatever it was. And you will hear the final 15 seconds of You Light Up My Life. Well, as I'm explaining this, John Guerin, who is the program director, comes into the studio and I say, hey, open his mic. So we have a discussion. Let's put it that way. And and my recollection of it is, although I think his is slightly different, I got him to concede that the possibility existed that there would be some listeners who would actually stay tuned to see if I actually did this. And the whole idea of getting somebody to listen to your radio show for 4 hours, all right, was a big deal because all of the ratings were based on people listening for a quarter hour. So that's what I did. I did that. And then that's the Debbie Boone story. Although, years later, somewhere in the 90s, it was like the 50th anniversary or the 30th anniversary or the whatever anniversary it was. And I was on an oldie station and I was going to say, I'm going to take a year to play this. And at the end of it, Debbie Boone came on. Yeah. And it was fun. It was just, you know, it was a giggle. Let's just put it that way. But I got a text here from 630. Great. Now that Debbie Boone song is in my head.
Oh my God.
I know. Yeah. Well, that was, but there were plenty. Don't get me wrong. There was a time when, a certain sound of music was prevalent. There was another song called Seasons in the Sun by Terry Jacks that was written, I believe, by Rod McEwen, which started out with something like, it's hard to die with all the birdies in the sky. And I'm like, what are you doing to my rock and roll radio program? Bum, 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 bum. I can't get it out of my mind now, so...
Sorry, John.
No, 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 no. What about you? You give me a tune you can't stand.
Well, you know, you just mentioned how, you know, the idea is to get people to keep listening.
Yes.
Yeah. And one time I was driving through Southern Illinois with my then boyfriend. He was taking me back to school. Mm-hmm. And this is back when you had to listen to terrestrial radio. You didn't have any other options in the
car, right?
We got on one channel and it was Guns N' Roses. It was Welcome to the Jungle.
Yeah.
And we listened to it once and then it played again.
And then it played again. On the same station?
The same station. Same station. And so I couldn't change the channel because it's like, is it going to play again? Is it going to play again? And we just kept listening to it because somebody must have set it so the tape would play over and over, but they set it for the song.
Did anybody ever come on the air?
No.
How long did this go on?
I mean, I think we lost the station. It was at least an hour of listening to that song over and over again.
You know, yes. My guess is it was an automation station, that there wasn't anybody there. And somehow the automation got screwed up and kept repeating the same song. Or, although I doubt it, radio stations would do what they call stunting when they're trying to draw attraction to maybe a format change. And they'll repeat a song over and over and over again for X amount of times. But they'll let you know that they're doing this, you know.
Interesting. This is why I'm glad I brought it up, because you're the expert.
Well, I know a little bit about this anyway. and that would burn out. That would be the curiosity of it too. Would be, if you came into it and Guns N' Roses keeps playing over and over again, it's playing again. It's playing again. And there weren't any commercials or station breaks or anything like that. It just played.
None. And it was on a week. It was like a Sunday, you know.
So, where were you? Where you were, like, outside of Champaign Urbana, or where were you?
No, it was. I was going from. He went to Southern Illinois University in Carbondale.
Oh, SIU. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So he was driving me from Carbondale to Columbia, Missouri, where I went to school.
Okay, so you're like rural.
Super rural. Yeah.
There you go.
That makes sense to you?
Yeah. It would follow, sort of. That somebody's not watching this. Somebody's not watching the store, and the song got out of hand. I got a text from 847. If I wanted to end an argument with my wife, all I had to do was sing "Afternoon Delight." As usual, Corey Moore, great to have you on. Love it. Can't wait till we do it again. And if people want to get the newsletter, the Vintage Chicago Tribune, what do they got to do?
Just go to chicagotribune.com and you can look for my name, Corey Rumore, and you can sign up for the newsletter. You can follow me on social medias. You can click on my stories. All the good stuff is at chicagotribune.com.
All right. And I look forward to talking about more good stuff soon in the future. Thanks, Corey.
Good night and good luck, John.
Good night and good luck. Good idea.